Pensacola's first choice for morning news, traffic, sports, and talk. The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Good morning, Pensacola.
I get up, I get down, and I'm jumping around. And the rumpus and ruckus are comfortable now. Been a hell of a ride, but I'm thinking it's time to grow. So I got an apartment across from the park. Put quinoa in my fridge, still I'm not feeling grown. Been a hell of a ride, but I'm thinking it's time to grow.
Here we go.
The intelligence that we based our planning on indicated that the January 6th protests were expected to be similar to the previous MAGA rallies in 2020, which drew tens of thousands of participants. The assessment indicated that members of the Proud Boys, white supremacist groups, Antifa, and other extremist groups were expected to participate on January 6th, and that they may be inclined to become violent. Based on the intelligence that we received, we planned for an increased level of violence at the Capitol, and that some participants may be armed. But none of the intelligence we received predicted what actually occurred.
So we had our first hearing yesterday, and that was the voice of Stephen Sun. He's the former Capitol Police Chief. And it was very interesting, okay, because the basic takeaway from all of this, the basic thing that you have to take away, is that the picture that had been portrayed by, I'd say, Democrat lawmakers, particularly, especially throughout the impeachment hearings, was something along these lines. Though the police did their best, they did their best after making a lot of bad choices. And they were not prepared. And everybody should have known that this riot was coming, that the insurrection was happening. There were numerous intelligence warnings. Everybody knew President Trump was organizing a riot, an insurrection, to stop Congress from certifying the Electoral College vote. Remember, that was the whole theme of the impeachment, is that it was all out in the open. Trump called for it. Everybody knew he called for it. Everybody understood there was going to be violence. And yet somehow all of these law enforcement agencies failed to respond, didn't do their jobs, weren't prepared. Some of them were even complicit in all of this. And they basically, you know, to the degree you blame them or the rioters, the point is that this was all knowable in advance, long in advance, long enough to have planned for it. And basically what he and the others were saying is, no, no, you're completely wrong about that.
As recent as Tuesday, January 5th, during a meeting I hosted with my executive team, the Capitol Police Board, and a dozen of the top law enforcement and military officials from D.C., no entity, including the FBI, provided any new intelligence regarding January 6th. It should be also noted that the Secretary of Homeland Security did not issue an elevated or imminent alert in reference to the events at the United States Capitol on January 6th. We properly planned for a mass demonstration with possible violence. What we got was a military-style coordinated assault on my officers and a violent takeover of the Capitol building.
So, in other words, they knew there was going to be a protest. They knew there was going to be a speech. They knew there was going to be an elevated presence of Trump supporters. And they even had indications that there were going to be white supremacists and, you know, folks like that. Okay, they knew that. But their intelligence assessment, the briefings that they had gotten, that everybody was involved in leading up to the Capitol riot, basically said, it's going to be like the Million MAGA March plus a little. You know, you're going to have to be prepared. You're going to have people. You're going to, you know, they might be have to, you know, stop some fights, maybe a lot of fights. There might be a fair amount of physical involvement in this. But there's not going to be anything even, I mean, the expectation was not that there would be anything like what they actually saw on that day. Now, here's the voice of this is Paul Irving. He is the former House Sergeant of Arms.
We began planning for the protests of January 6th and December 2020. The planning relied on what we understood to be credible intelligence provided by various state and federal agencies, including a special event assessment issued by the Capitol Police on January 3rd. The January 3rd assessment forecast that the protests were, quote, expected to be similar to the previous Million MAGA March rallies that had taken place in November and December 2020. every Capitol Police daily intelligence report between January 4 and January 6th, including on January 6th, forecast the chance of civil disobedience or arrest during the protests as remote to improbable. I relied on that intelligence when overseeing the security plan put forth by Chief Sun.
So one story about the Capitol riot, and this, we talked about this during impeachment, but we didn't have the kind of evidence that you got yesterday, and we didn't have the kind of perspective that you get when you have, you know, witnesses and an investigation. And we were forced to engage in a lot of speculation about how knowable this was, how preventable this was, how stoppable this was after it had already started, and who was responsible and all of that stuff. And essentially what you have is you have some extraordinarily capable law enforcement leaders. Oh, I know looking back, you don't want to, you know, acknowledge that, but, and they've resigned. Many of them have resigned. And, you know, when you have a big fail, okay, that may be the right approach. But you're talking like, I think it's Sund is a guy who was a, he was a former two-time presidential Secret Service detail. You know, he was a director or an assistant director within the agency. I mean, these are not slouches. These are decades. I mean, you don't get to be in their position as the chief of Capitol Police or the chief of the Metropolitan Police for D.C. or as the House Sergeant. You don't get to be in their position by, you know, being crummy at your job in law enforcement. So what these guys were doing was they were preparing for what was predicted, for what was expected. And again, you have two different narratives about the Capitol riot. Narrative one is that this was all obvious, planned, intended, clearly in the open. Trump was calling for an insurrection. Narrative number two is that you had Trump calling his people there in order to create a visible force as a way of reminding Congress that the election, with his terms, the election was fraudulent and stolen, and encouraging them to not certify the votes of the states whose electoral outcomes he says are dubious. Have a lot of people around to remind them that the people are here and that the people matter so that they will vote and not certify those electoral results. But meanwhile, other assets, evildoers, plotted to co-opt that peacefully intended event, political pressure, sure, but peacefully intended, to co-opt that to their purposes of violent overthrow of the government. And the question is, if it was all out in the open, why weren't they more prepared? And the answer is, because it wasn't all out in the open. Because nobody really knew this was happening. It caught everybody by surprise. And so they had to react to it once it started to happen. And also, this notion of, well, why weren't they better prepared? And that's a fair question. You know, why weren't they better able to resist this and stop it once it was going on? And their answer on this is, nobody can prevent something like this with a police force. I mean, if you had days and weeks to plan where you knew there was going to be a violent assault with thousands of people, or in the case of the 800 who went inside, you know, if you knew that was coming, you could plan for it and bring in resources. But no mere police force is capable of actually stopping something like this once it's not really, not quickly, not immediately. The fact that they did as much as they could is pretty amazing.
No civilian law enforcement agency, to include the United States Capitol Police, is trained or equipped to repel an insurrection of thousands of individuals focused on breaching a building at all costs.
So essentially, you had a coordinated attack on the Capitol that began before the end of Trump's speech. We knew this from the timeline, and that's something that, again, the defense and the impeachment made a lot of, and the Democrats didn't make a lot of, because it was essentially a separate event from the march, and so, or from the protest rally and then the march. It happened first and it happened independent of. There were these people at the Capitol conducting a coordinated, using radios, using climbing equipment, coming with tactical gear and CS gas and all of that. And then you had the people who were at the rally. So this notion that Trump somehow planned and knew that he would bring a bunch of his supporters up to the Capitol to do violence, have them at the rally, work them up into a frenzy, tell them to go down to the Capitol and fight, right? That was the allegation. Well, this doesn't fit any of the facts. Instead, what you've got is a rally of mostly peaceful people and a violent insurrection by a bunch of other people that began before the rally that took place for a long time thereafter, that the police did not see coming, that there was no known intelligence. There was an intelligence email sent out the night before that nobody really knew was what it was. Nobody got alerted to it. They didn't have any reason to react to it. In fact, they didn't even see it. And then you had the attack, and once the attack was underway, well, it's too late at that point. And even so, police, unless they know in advance, aren't really capable of repelling this many people in this concerted of a way. Now, that still doesn't answer all the questions. There are still, I think, very open questions about why the National Guard didn't respond. There's a bit of a disagreement about the facts. Did the, you know, did the request for National Guard intervention happen at 1:10 or at 2:10? Rough, I'm rounding numbers. Well, they disagreed about that. One remembered it one way, one remembered it the other way. That's a problem either way. Why didn't the National Guard get more involved more quickly? But the picture of the Capitol riot, it just the one that was laid out in the impeachment and also the one that we've tended to kind of assume from what we didn't know from the law enforcement agencies at the time, I mean, I'll just tell you, my picture was just wrong. And the other thing I'll say this is, although, I mean, it fills in gaps what we thought might have been the case, but the impression left was definitely not, my impression left was definitely not accurate. I will say this, the one thing they were clear about, though, it absolutely was an insurrection attempt by the people who were invading the Capitol. And not everybody necessarily in there had that in mind, but the ones who showed up prepared, planning, all of the gear that they brought, and their coordinated efforts at attack on the Capitol and looking for people that they wanted to do harm to, and it could have been so much worse. All of the witnesses agreed about all that. So we have some clarity. Obviously, we don't have total clarity about everything, but we definitely have more clarity about it than we had before. And to be honest, there are two things that I think we all wanted to see in this. One is we wanted to have some better perspective about to what degree President Trump should have been held accountable for the events. I think I have a lot more clarity about that. And number two, and I'll say what I said before, I think the president could have done a lot better. I still don't know about why the National Guard wasn't used more quickly. That very much concerns me. But as far as this in the open, coordinated, known, open call for arms against, I mean, that's a bunch of rubbish. That's nonsense. The other question is just the basic question of, well, you know, how can we prevent something like this in the future? Could it have been prevented at the time? And the answer is, well, a lot of lessons learned. And that's what law enforcement agencies do. Something goes wrong. Lessons learned, plan again differently for the future. 521 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. Here on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. One note about the COVID-19 numbers from yesterday is a very, very, very bad day of reporting deaths locally. 12 new deaths reported in Escambia County. That's a really high number. But, and I say this just because you always have to understand things in context, day reporting is not day of occurrence. Remember, we learned a long time ago that deaths are happening as much as 30 days or more prior to when they're reported. So it feels like 12 people died yesterday. That's false. We don't know how many people died yesterday. We know that, you know, on Sunday on Sunday, nobody was reported to die, which is normal. They don't have a lot of reports on Sunday because of reporting processes. And on Monday, 12 people. And we don't have any idea really when they died. But still, 12 is a lot. And we try to understand what's going on by looking at that stuff. But if you compare it by the weeks, like if you actually look at the various totals that have been happening week over week, in Escambia County, the deaths are actually down. Now, it's still not good. But 22 in the last 7 days is less than 29 the week prior, 33 the week prior, 35 the week prior, 53 the week prior. So even though 22 is still an enormous number and 12 in a day looks awful, the trend is actually down. In Santa Rosa, it's been holding steady. It was one new death yesterday. That's 8 in the last 7 days. And then it was 10, 19, 9, and 28 going backwards in time. 437-1620, Mark Jacobs in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. Mark?
Good morning. Tiger Woods, conscious, stable, and lucky to be alive this morning after a serious rollover accident.
Investigators say a seatbelt likely saved his life. Over at the crash scene, investigators also say there's no indication Tiger Woods was impaired, and there's also no sign that he tried to brake before this accident, that his vehicle rolled over several times.
That's NBC's Miguel Almaguer, the golf legend, driving near L.A. early yesterday when his SUV left the road at high speed. More hearings scheduled in Congress today on last month's U.S. Capitol attack. House hearing will focus on warning signs before the assault, featuring testimony from experts on domestic terrorism. And Virginia is about to have a new law that declares racism a public health crisis. Governor Ralph Northam expected to sign the declaration the Virginia State Senate approved, making Virginia the first southern state to declare racism a public health crisis.
Virginia is also the one that just stopped doing executions, right? Just a day or two ago, same thing. Interesting. All right, Mark, thanks so much for the update. 526 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
Find our podcasts on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and NewsRadio923.com.
Here on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's a Pensacola Morning News, and yesterday we had a chance to talk to Escambia Sheriff Chip Simmons. Chief, welcome back. Chief, such a habit. Sheriff, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
I'm doing great. Very good to have you. You guys, you opened the Molino substation back up after a couple of years of not being in operation this weekend, right?
Yeah, on Saturday, we opened our second precinct. If you recall, on February the 6th, we opened the precinct that had been closed in Perdido. And then on Saturday, in just a terrific day, we opened the Molino precinct. As I mentioned up there on Saturday, that the building itself was in basically in shambles, really, until we got out there the last couple of weeks with the assistance of Escambia County Facilities. And we painted it. They repaved a lot. They did a lot of work. We had a septic tank issue that the men and women at the sheriff's office really did a great job of fixing. So we get there, and the weather's kind of cool, but it ends up being very nice. We had a terrific turnout. It was more of a carnival atmosphere. It was really a great thing to see and a great thing to experience. So yeah. So we now have a precinct in Molino with a full time. Lieutenant Bobby Nelson will be up there, and we're hoping that people will swing by and talk to him. If they have any concerns, they can go to the precinct to call Lieutenant Nelson, meet him there. If they want to have a meeting with a sheriff or a chief deputy, then we can meet him up there as well.
You know, as you know, my wife and I go biking every weekend, and we just finished all of Escambia County 2 weeks ago. So we've biked every road in the county, and I'll just tell you, you know, I am amazed every time I think about it how sprawling and far-flung the responsibilities are for example, you know, the superintendent, and of course for you to have to police everything from Perdido to Pensacola Beach, especially now with the bridge out, all the way up to Century and everywhere in between. It's a massive amount of land space and population spread to be able to oversee.
It really is, and that's why it's so important. I felt like it was so important to open these precincts. We have a precinct in Century. Now we have one in Molino. We have one in Inslee. We have one in Warrington. We opened one again in Perdido. We have Pensacola Beach precinct, and obviously we have our main office over on Leonard Street. So if you think about it, we're a very spread out community. We're working towards getting more precincts, but as you said, it requires that because we're such a big county, and to have deputies that are in that area familiar with each different area we think is very important.
Absolutely.
We did get a lot of questions about, well, where do we go next? But
No, go ahead. Are you intending to, I guess at this point it'd be to either acquire or construct, but are you intending to open any more?
Yeah, well, the sheriff's office does not own property. We would have to work with the Board of County Commissioners. The precincts that we reopened were still technically in the possession of the sheriff's office because we were able to use them, but they just weren't being used, obviously. And so what we'd have to do is work with the Board of County Commissioners and then determine where and if another precinct is needed. Kind of have my eye on the Myrtle Grove area, kind of have my eye on the Beulah area. But that's going to require a lot of conversation. It may not be this year, but it's certainly something that we'll look at and see if we can, first of all, acquire the property, as you said, and then secondly, if we can get the manpower that can actually, that we can man the posts themselves.
Okay, so this is probably the most dangerous thing that I'm going to do, but I had an idea pop into my head, and it's probably a terrible one, but I can't shake it in the 5 seconds since I thought of it. When you've got a high-crime area, and you know where those are, would it be feasible to enter into some kind of a short-term rental lease agreement with a property in that area and have a temporary substation just so you're right present in a situation like, I mean, I don't know. That's the idea that occurred to me. It's probably a terrible one, but what do you think?
Well, I think those are all good ideas. I think we're talking about that sort of thing. We're talking about having a mobile precinct, parking our command bus at a certain location for a couple weeks at a time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to just open a precinct just to say, oh, we opened a precinct. I want there to be enough staffing available. I want there to be deputies that are there that can work that area on a day in and day out basis. And I want to be able to get someone that's in charge of that precinct. And what we have, the rank level of a lieutenant in charge of our precincts now. And I think that works out pretty well. So I want to make sure that we're all on the same boat. I want to have those conversations with the individual commissioners about their districts and get their input, obviously. And then we can show them, a heat map, basically, of where the crime's taking place, and we can zero in on a location, again, not just to say we've done it, but to actually do it so that it is, beneficial to the community itself.
Yeah, most definitely. We're talking to Chip Simmons. He is the sheriff in Escambia County. Sheriff, I know that we need to inform people about certain kinds of crimes, but crimes involving children and crimes against women are the ones that I'm the most reluctant to talk about, but I know they're important because it reminds people of the importance of being good neighbors. Y'all had a child neglect story this week that really kind of highlights the importance of eyes on neighborhoods, right?
Absolutely. We got a call on December the 30th of an unknown problem, and we get those a lot. People will call us up and say, there's something wrong at this neighborhood or that neighborhood or this specific house, and we would go there and we'll check it out. Well, on December the 30th, we got a call of an unknown problem. So when we get there, we notice that there is what's described as a young infant reaching her arm and head out of a broken bedroom window, but no one comes to the door. So our deputies make entry because obviously this is a danger to this young child. When we get in there, we find three children total. They're locked into a room, and the room is tied. The door is tied shut with a charging cable that's attached to an adjacent door. And then we notice that dogs are there's like three dogs in basically terrible conditions. There's feces and urine, dog feces and urine all over the place. There are bottles full of marijuana, and there's no adult in the area. So we end up arresting Christian Pearson, who, again, it was not there. The reason I'm talking about it now is because we were able to serve the warrant on him on Thursday. We ended up charging him with child neglect and possession of marijuana. And as you mentioned, we don't usually brag about these things, but we want to make sure that people understand that if there's a situation where they think children are in danger or there's some sort of neglect, then they can call the sheriff's office, or if they're in the city, they can call the police department, and we can go and check it out. In this case, we called Animal Control, and we called Division of Children's Services. They took the children, and Animal Control took the dogs. And we filed for an affidavit for the adult that was supposed to be there and protecting these children, but they were not. So it's just a reminder that it doesn't have to. You don't have to call the sheriff's office to your own home if you're aware of situations like this, specifically involving children, you can give us a call.
Well, as you say, and as I mentioned, you know, it's the kind of thing we distaste for talking about because it's so awful. But if people don't pay attention, then bad things continue. And sometimes, you know, it's important to just remember that, you know, we may be the last line of defense against some child continuing to live a life of real neglect. And, you know, you have a duty. Sheriff, you used to be the chief of police in Pensacola. And I certainly don't want to put you in the position of being, you know, at odds politically with the mayor or anybody else, especially as you guys are starting to develop your relationship there. But I did want to ask you, because I'm curious your take on this. You know, Pensacola, anything it does is going to have an effect on the county and vice versa. Pensacola is engaging in a gun buyback program. And we've talked about this many times. I've been very critical. My basic concern is that at the low end, if you price the guns too low, it's not going to work. Who'd be dumb enough to sell a pistol for $50? On the other hand, if you price it too high, a reasonable price, especially in today's market, you're going to buy guns for $150, $200. All of a sudden, you've given every teen gang that already is incentivized to go check car doors at night and find out if they might have possessions or gun in them, you've given them that much more reason to go right now before the gun buyback program and acquire guns. You don't have to answer that specifically, but I am curious to get your thoughts on the gun repurchase program.
Well, I think I'll just say that we're not participating in the gun buyback. When I was a police chief, there was a gun buyback years ago. I can't remember, probably 6-8 years ago. And we had something similar to that. And we had a lot of people coming and giving us, you know, small pieces of guns and stuff. And quite honestly, I couldn't tell the difference. And there's a varying opinions on whether it's effective or not. And for that reason, we're not going to participate. And I don't anticipate having a gun buyback program in the county. But I will tell you this, they're doing something. They're trying. And I think that when you raise awareness and have education you know, regarding the safety of guns, and I think they're giving away gun locks and that sort of thing, I think it's a good thing. I think that you've heard us talking many times about gun safety, and we talk a lot about people that mistakenly injure themselves with guns. We talk a lot about locking your car doors and keeping guns. But, you know, I'm a fan of carrying concealed. I'm a fan of an individual's right to carry a firearm. And I think that, you know, that's very important to me. So while we will not participate in a gun buyback program, I do give them credit for raising awareness and for seeking an education aspect of their own program.
You know, you give me an idea, and maybe it'd just be a tone shift, but if it were a gun safety and education seminar, free gun locks and things like that, and we'll teach you how to have your guns stored safely. Oh, and by the way, we also will repurchase guns if you're concerned about them. Weirdly, I'd be all for that, you know, especially if that were kind of an ongoing thing that would happen maybe once a quarter or every 6 months or something like that. But maybe I'd be for that. I don't know. But that's an interesting comment, Chip. I appreciate that. So Sheriff Escambia County, Chip Simmons, as always, a pleasure, sir. Thank you so much for the time. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
You bet. Y'all take care.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. 548 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. You know, last year in a down economy with a hurricane, with the bridge out, with the COVID, with everything else that was going on, you had Christina Leavenworth and her team at Levin Renke Realty sold 130 homes. I mean, their goal going into the year was to sell 100. So they hit their goal and blew right past it to 130 homes, which means they know how to get the job done. They know how to get you a good price. They know how to get it done quickly. They know. I mean, the worst thing when you're trying to sell a home, the one thing you don't want is just to have to be waiting around hoping that it's going to turn out. You know, hoping what's going to happen. It's anxious. It's nerve-wracking. It's frustrating. So Christina Leavenworth and her team, they know how to get things done quickly. Like they just had a home over in Marcus Point. Three offers in a single day and ended up above list price for the selling. Another home by the mall, 8 offers in a single day. I mean, it's just, it's great. Now, the market is very good right now. There's no doubt about that. But market good for some people might be an offer in a week. Market good for Christina Leavenworth and their team is 8 offers in a day. Why? Because they know how to take the photos. They know how to stage it. They know how to present it on social media. They know how to market it, to follow up, to do just all of the different little things that they know how to do extremely well. And they get the results, as you know, because we talk about it all the time. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Levin Renke Realty, they can definitely help you. 723-9158,
723-9158. Bicycle, bicycle, bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it.
52 on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. So glad you guys listened to us. I know it's early. I know nobody really wants to be up at this hour. If you want to be up at this hour, bless your heart. Nobody else does. But we are here for you because due to whatever circumstances in your life that make it so that you're up at 5:52 on a Wednesday morning, we are also up with you. Right, Mark? Is that a fair way to say it?
I think the world should only operate from about 11 a.m. to 3 p.m.
I'm all for it. I'm all for it. Let's go to the impending French work week, eight hours a week. And works. No Fridays.
Works for me.
Yeah. Oh, well done. All right, Mark.
A statement released on social media says golf legend Tiger Woods suffered fractures affecting the upper and lower portions of his leg, and a rod was inserted. Also suffered foot and ankle injuries, screws and plates inserted. Crashed that SUV early yesterday. LA authorities say that stretch of road where he lost control's got a high frequency of accidents.
Every day is starting around a time when that sun breaks. It's a blind spot. You can't see nothing.
Several neighbors say that winding, steep section is dangerous, especially if you're not riding your brakes all the way down. Happened about 7:15 in the morning, L.A. time yesterday. Washington State Police say a woman there got more than she bargained for when she bought an old crochet kit at a thrift store in Seattle. Got home and opened it up. Found an odd-smelling package inside made out of yellow rubber. On the outside, it was written 100%. Yeah, see where that's going. Police called. Yes, indeed.
Let me guess, it's not garlic powder.
No. 100%, 2 pounds of cocaine.
Wow.
In a crochet kit at a thrift store.
What, you know, what in a crochet kit? That's just funny.
She's going to do a lot of crocheting.
What do you do? What do you do with if you just discover, you know, secondhand coke in your crochet kit?
Find something that's odd smelling in my crochet kit, I immediately call the police.
You know what I heard is that she said that it tasted even weirder.
Yeah, well, you know, she tried that way. You know, the way they check it on
oh my
cop
God.
Shows.
All the did, cop shows, yes.
Stick your pinky finger in there.
Stick your pinky and rub it on your gum, which we learned from Mike Wood is 100% bumpkus. They don't do that, right? So, goodness. All right, Mark. You ever are you a thrift store guy?
Once in a while.
Oh, okay, so that's our thing. Like, we love the garage sales and thrift stores.
Go look and see what kind of other people's things they don't want that we don't want either.
To turn your nose up what everybody else has turned your nose up at before. I can tell you I don't think I have ever discovered anything particularly interesting in any of the things that I've ever bought used. I mean, you find stuff, but it's like, you know, the dry cleaner tag. You know, it's nothing valuable, right? But I want to have one of those stories. I want to have one of those, like, lottery kind of, oh, look, it's an envelope of $5 million. That's what I want. An unsigned cashier's check, you know, something like that. That would be...
I always like going to thrift stores because I'm a big fan of classic video games. And every now and then, you'll see someone turn in, you know, their old PlayStation or the old Sega Dreamcast. I almost bought one of those one time from a thrift store. But I did not. But I'm kind of with Mark. You want to walk around and see the things that people didn't want and that you most likely don't want either.
You got to have quick scan eyes. You got to be able to look at a lot of stuff and know that most of it you have no interest in. Speaking of weird video, I discovered, do you know the game The Intelligent Cube? Have you ever heard of this game?
No.
It's an old PlayStation game, and it's rare, and like you say, I found it at, like, I don't know, some thrift store, because they don't know, you know, the cool stuff they've got a lot of times, right, if it's unusual, and I think I bought it for like $1, and then I resold it to our local video game store for like 40. You know, woohoo! That's the closest I get to a rich discovery. 5:56 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. So we finally got the announcement from the governor. Related to Rush Limbaugh, related to the flag, which is now a national controversy. Have you seen this? It's all over the national news. Are talking about this. But it is supposed to be today that the flag is going to be flown at half staff. The order was for the state offices and then also at the Capitol and then also in West Palm Beach, Florida, of course, which was his home, and also in Tallahassee.